Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent, abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the podcast, you will see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way. I'm David Lee.
That guy is David Lee. Darn it. I was trying to fool you. Like,
and this guy is Mac Antigua.
So do you like it? Do you like what we did? You got to keep it fresh, man. We're like, what, week 8 of the queue and week 18 of this pod and all this stuff. So anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for coming on board. It's a really great episode today as we get to celebrate a big sort of victory during our COVID-19 response, which is the Artist Relief Fund.
Completing. This time last week, when we had our last episode drop, I think it was an open question as to whether or not we would be able to get to the last artist on the wait list. And thanks to an anonymous donor connected to us by the Greater Milwaukee Foundation, we have been able to close the remaining gifts or the remaining requests in our MKE Artist Relief Fund, which is just so incredible. I remember through this process, there have been a couple of times where Mac has said, I don't know if we're going to be able to go 423 for 423. Yeah. And as of this time last week, it seemed like we were going to go, 300 and something for 423.
Yeah. We're about 70 short. We're going to be about 70 short. Yeah.
But no.
And I was, and I was trying to be in that space of like, wow, 340 is awesome. But I had this nagging feeling of like, we didn't do it right. Which is, not always the best way to go through life, but it's so great that donor stepped up. And again, wasn't just the donor, because that donor doesn't step up if we didn't get that far with the other contributions. So thanks so much to everyone for that. And after the drop, we're actually bringing some folks in the IMK team who played different roles during this campaign to share their takes.
This was a team effort, right? This doesn't happen if it didn't have all of us working in tandem together to make sure that we were able to raise the amount of money and distribute it quickly and engage our neighborhood partners and communicate, right? Like, none of this happens without the rest of the team. So after the break, we will have we'll have some members of the IMK team to talk about the MKE Artist Relief Fund.
I can't be the everything to everyone all the time.
Well, we're so excited to have some members of our team join us to celebrate this incredible resolution, right? This incredible resolution to the MKE Artist Relief Fund that we did not expect us to be at this time last week. So joining us, we have Lindsay Sheridan, who's our Director of Marketing and PR, and Antoine Carter, who's our Neighborhood Liaison. Welcome.
Hey, what's guys. Up?
How you guys doing?
Also, this is a backdoor pilot for the podcast these will launch. Kind of Gary Marshall did that with like Happy Days. That's how you got like Laverne and Shirley and Mork and Mindy. Years from now, this is like when Antoine's million download podcast. Hey, we could say it started here. And Lindsay's million download
podcast.
Sorry,
I'm too young for that reference. So
that's exactly why we're leaning on you all eventually to carry the torch. Much more relevant. All right.
Back we to were we had invited Annie Peterson and Kenita Hickman to join as well, because we wanted the whole team. But Kenita unfortunately is not feeling well, and Annie deferred. As is her hipster laureate brand, she deferred.
So, Lindsay, you and I were the only people in the office March 13th. Except that was actually the last time anybody was in the.
I was in the office. MK office. I was in the office.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. We were the only ones in the office with David when we launched the fund. What is your memory of the beginning of this fund?
Yeah, I remember that date really well. That's been my marker for how long we've been in this pandemic, because that was a pretty active week for us anyway, right? We had these work groups on the calendar. So I had those dates hovering in my brain anyway. And the Friday that we had the opportunity to launch the fund really quickly, it had just been maybe like 24 hours where it was starting to feel like, oh, maybe we shouldn't be gathering. Maybe we shouldn't be in the office right now. So I think we all kind of came in that day feeling like, well, this this might be the last day for a while. But here we are. And I had personally been feeling the day before, like, wow, we're really on the verge of something big and crazy here. What should we be doing as an organization to react? But our heads were so a tizzy that we didn't have the answer to that question yet. And then, as you know, we all came in that day and had the opportunity to launch it in a big way when Kelly reached out to us about a concert that evening.
Yeah, you know, I think for me, having had that conversation with Kelly, I remember sharing with all of you that, like, I was having a conversation with her in the morning and that something might change or that we might think about doing something. And then I think we talked at like 10. And then I remember coming in the office and I think you and Mac were working on, you know, wrapping up or whatever we were doing, whatever you were doing pre-COVID time. And I said to you all, hey, we're doing this concert tonight and we're supporting it with this fund. Mac, can you go research other emergency funds? And I remember Mac sort of like looking at me with his eyes sort of wide open. And then Lindsay, I will never forget this. Like, you clapped and we're like, yeah, let's get to it. Finally, we can do something. And it was like at that moment, the team sort of came together and was like, super friends, you know, let's come together and do this thing, which is, I think, really, really inspiring to me, sort of seeing that moment.
The response to COVID-19 was in addition to a fund, but also responding at the community level. And that's want to bring you in, Antoine, because your core work isn't necessarily the fund, but rather making sure that arts and culture shows up for the neighborhoods. And what was it like working with the neighborhood partners and artists in Amani and Metcalf Park, right, while this thing was just starting?
It was interesting because we had just had our neighborhood partnerships work group meeting maybe a week and a half before, and a lot of energy was getting towards increasing voter participation and hosting a lot of events and creating excitement and buzz around, you know, that day in April, which seems so far ago. But I remember once the COVID hit, a lot of those projects started to end very quickly. You know, you couldn't have over 50 people for a while, and then you couldn't have over 20 people. So it was really hard to think about a way to bring in as many people as we can and get them registered to vote. So that knocked a lot of wind out of our sails as far as some of the short-term stuff we were looking to do. But then it also started to lead into how can arts and culture groups help? So a lot of conversations became, okay, what are the needs of the community? And the COVID task force, at least one meeting was set up, the one in relationship to supporting Amani and Metcalf Park.
And what happened? Like, what was the key elements of that one convening, yeah, right? We brought those arts and culture groups. Can you speak to some of the follow-up what happened after that?
Yeah, because residents, a lot of the groups that said they had basic needs like toiletries, non-perishable food items. They needed cleaning supplies to sterilize. They also needed just hands. And so the meeting, which engaged a lot of partners, Metcalf Park was able to borrow a van from a neighborhood partner, from an arts group, to help build their capacity to do more delivery of care packages. We ended up getting about 9,000 masks donated to residents, and those were distributed as well. And it's led to just a lot of new partnerships and new friendships being formed through supporting someone in the trenches.
That's great. You know, I'm a little bit bummed that we don't have Tanita and Annie on the pod to talk a little bit about the administration of the fund and the communication of it. But Mac and Lindsay, given that you both, I think Mac, you were sort of the keeper of a lot of the incoming data, right, with how we collected applications and who applied and all of that sort of stuff. And then Lindsay, you really sort of took control of the external communications to our growing network of donors and just the general network. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like, right? I mean, I think we had a pretty large incoming of applications, right? At least at the outset, and also a pretty big number to reach on the fundraising side at the outset. And so, be curious to as one of the earlier artist emergency funds in the nation, like what was that like sort of dealing with that incoming when we, you know, didn't really know what it would look like for us?
Well, I mean, I think at least from a data standpoint, right, we had about 240 applications, I think, that first week. And then we actually like got about 180 the week after that, and then 130 the week after that. And by that third week, it was easily seen that like we couldn't take any more applications if you even wanted a puncher's chance at fulfilling the ones that were approved, about 85% approval rate. And so I think what was interesting in some ways, the fund was picking up speed because of the great external communications, but we actually had to cut it off at some point because it just, you know, it just wasn't fair to say we're going to fulfill, you know, there's no way we're going to fill 500, 600, 700. I think like where we cut it off was just realistically, you know, by the time we figured out, oh, okay, 420 or so apps that we could fund, and we looked at the number, $200,000. I mean, that was four times the number that we had. So I think that, I mean, that allowed us, like, at least in real time, just trying to track that allowed us to pivot, and we actually shut down the deadline sooner than we could. And I think what also I would see is that it's not just the data internally, but the ability for Lindsay to like convert that to messaging outside externally, I think really built confidence in the process, and it kept people engaged, which was really key for, I think, for foundations later to come on board and almost legitimize that this wasn't just a GoFundMe page, right? It really looked like more than that. And that we were really able to connect resources to artists really rapidly. And so I think that was really vital in the success of getting to what we did.
Yeah, you know, it has been interesting in that the sort of rapid fundraising and awareness building is not necessarily our core product. It is the background I come from, right? I'm essentially from a sales background, having worked in performing arts marketing for all of my career before this. But it wasn't necessarily our model to be pushing out to a variety of levels of audiences to appeal to them to donate. It's just not what we've been up to. So it was interesting to have the conceptual shift of that. And also, I think both encouraging and tough to know that actual livelihoods depended on our ability to succeed in that. I think it was the right thing to be able to center us, especially in the early days of this pandemic where everything felt especially chaotic. But it was also a lot of responsibility then. I think that we all felt very acutely that we needed to follow through on our promise to these artists.
Yeah, and I think what one part that I would definitely want to make sure we talk a little bit about is this is the fact that while we were the home for this fund, I mean, we had how many folks review grant applications? 24, 26 people from our artist support group partnered with Kaneda to review the 500 or so applications that came in.
And neighborhood people. Neighborhood folks, right? Antoine identified folks in the neighborhood partnership.
Yeah. And neighborhood partnerships group. That's right.
Let's not leave those folks out, which I thought was a really cool cross-section of folks reviewing. It wasn't just, and this wasn't meant to be a review about juried review of your art's worth it, but rather does it just proof of evidence. So I think that allowed for anyone, if you will, that could contribute to do that. And much appreciation for Antoine, you know, another example of neighborhood folks from Metcalf and Amani and whatnot stepping in to help step into the breach and review all those, make quick decisions on those rapidly.
I think that's like a really great example of the network coming together in a way that that was a quick pivot to the work that we had asked them from the agreed upon work group work to like this bigger thing of how the arts and culture sector and neighborhood partners work together. I thought that was really, again, really inspiring. Matt, can you talk a little bit about the process that you had put together for, or you and Kenita had put together for the review?
Yeah, really quickly, the notion is we wanted to do speed and we wanted to have a point of view that art, you know, everyone, you know, can, as long as you can demonstrate a practice of your art and you can demonstrate that because of the pandemic, you had lost gigs or you lost service industry work. And it was pretty low barrier entry. Like, we didn't want people to write a lot of words necessarily, because again, that's more words that people review. And it has to be very clear so anyone could step in and go, okay, this makes sense. They submitted this, that looks like this practice, and we go for it. And a lot of the reasons why I think people didn't get approval was they weren't able just to demonstrate the connection to like what they were doing or and what they were asking for. And sometimes folks had incomplete pieces and we could send back, hey, can you please, you know, we would review stuff if it was incomplete, but you know, just because it was about speed, right? We just didn't have the bandwidth to always just case manage every submission, right? Everyone else was able to submit on time. Yeah, and we had to do it really quickly. And so, yeah, we would get the applications in on Wednesday, and then Kenita and the team of volunteer reviewers would take till Friday morning to review them all. And so when you're talking about 180 apps, 150 apps, that's a quick turnaround to do it. And they did it really rapidly. And thankfully, by the third week, they had the system down. They got it a lot more efficient, but hopefully we'll never have to do this again because it's just a lot of moving parts, you know, and it's a lot of pieces. So much thanks to the artists and folks that stepped up to make that happen. And then we got by Friday morning, we were able to communicate the admin side. Here are the folks that are getting funding this week, or here are the folks that are on the wait list because we only have so much money in the fund to do that. And Thursday night was our cutoff, you know, whatever we raised by Thursday night, we could turn around. And then hopefully supporting Lindsay, right, to go, all right, let's go tell it on the mountaintop that this happened so folks knew that this existed and we could say in front of people's eyes on that. So,
well, and obviously something that really helped us keep moving along that shouting to the mountaintops was some significant gifts from foundations. Yeah. So we got to report out on these really thrilling achievements when we got big pots of money in from generous donations from foundations, in addition to the slowly growing pool of over 300 individual donations over the weeks.
Also from several states as well, not just Wisconsin, right? We had out-of-state donations as well, which was really powerful to see that. And also want to amplify, I would say I'm estimating, you know, thousands of dollars were donated by artists themselves, right? If it was something like N43 Records doing a live stream fundraiser, if it was, again, like the opening concert, the TSS with Kelly Fitzsimmons and Mindpool, right? That generated $3,000. But you also had individual artists that were using sales from 414 Day and like Lit MKE or Vincentia or Rocket Cat doing matching things. It was really powerful to see artists step up to support this fund, as well as artists that actually got funding early. They came back and almost replenished the fund with donating later. So, I mean, that's something I don't want to get lost in it. It wasn't, you know, yes, thanks to the grateful city from Milwaukee donors and foundations, but a lot of artists were helping themselves too. And I think that's super powerful to see.
And I think along those lines, you know, we had set the grant parameters as, you know, grants up to $500, right? And we asked artists to tell us how much they lost and how much they needed. And reviewing all of the applications and also just the funding levels, right? Like, not everybody asked for $500 in a time of high uncertainty and the greatest, you know, economic dislocation since who knows when. That you had artists basically say in their applications, you know, while I need 500, I can make do with 250 because I know other artists need, I want to make sure that this money goes to other people who are also as in need right now. And I thought that was, that the self-regulating of the ask, I thought was really, really inspiring in that other way too, right? That people sort of took care of each other while taking care of themselves.
You know, overall, you know, this, I think the story, I'd like to think of the COVID response for us includes the fund And of course the work in neighborhoods is that, like, how does arts and culture step up, right? How do we step up for our sector, but also how does the sector stand up for the city? And, you know, Antoine, I want to come back to you in the sort of the work you've been continuing to do as you continue to talk to Metcalf Park and Amani, you know, as a result of that connection, you know, what do you think they, do you get a sense of how, what they think they might be thinking differently perhaps of the, of folks we've convened, or is there, have you noticed, you know, what have you learned or observed of sort of, you know, when they think about arts and culture, the community partners you've been talking with, could you speak to that?
From what I've seen, I feel like neighborhood partnerships and the neighbors and the neighbors that we support, they feel like it was almost like they didn't know that they could ask for this from an arts and culture group. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't know that this was possible. And I think even arts and culture groups didn't know that they had this capacity within themselves to help outside of what they normally do. And it could be as easy as letting someone borrow your van that's sitting there, or, you know, an account plug, or, you know, something small that is small to you, but is huge for residents and for community. So I think it was the realization of an untapped market of, like, capacity, because the arts groups really stepped up. Like, groups were donating, you know, toiletries, toilet paper, bleach, which all are things that they still need. And it was just cool to see that not only can we help with our creativity, but we can help with other stuff.
So yeah, curious to pivot back to Lindsay, sort of thinking about, like, the incredible video you put together last week and all of the incredible press coverage about us, the announcement of the completion of the fund. I think two questions, right? One is, A, can you talk a little bit about that incredible video you edited and released last Thursday? But also, I'm curious to sort of build on Antoine's thought just now about, like, all the stuff that the arts and culture groups have done for the community, right? Like, I think that's also part of the story that we need to tell too, right? And how do we do that? I think that's sort of, if we could have, like, a video of all of the incredible arts engagement and all the and along with the art kits that were put out and distributed in the neighborhoods and all of the masks that were donated that one of our the steering committee co-chairs coordinated, right? Like, that feels like this other part of the story that we need to figure out how to tell more deeply.
Oh man, now I'm just sitting in this idea, like, all right, great, let's figure out how to do that. Thanks for seeding that in the middle of a podcast, boss. So yeah.
More work.
Yeah, I mean, we reached the end of this fund, right? And throughout, we've been privileged to read the stories of all of the artist applicants and the just the array of creativity and light they bring to the city. Didn't really know what to do with it. Part of the storytelling along the way was being conscious of not necessarily wanting to, I think, take advantage of the stories shared with us for direct fundraising necessarily. So we had, you know, but once we were able to fulfill all of the requests of the artist applicants, we wanted to do something to celebrate that and show off their work a little bit. And so, yeah, came up with this video idea, slightly foolish given that I'm a one person marketing, PR, design, etc. team. But I asked all of our artists, all of the artist applicants to share one photo or one 10-second video with us. And when we first thought about this idea, we wondered, you know, how many are actually going to send it on a quick timeline? What would success look like? How many would we need minimum? We're like, oh, you know, if we got like 45, it'd be powerful. It'd be great. But we actually got like 150, which was amazing. And really a lovely opportunity for me to directly connect with the artists who received support in a way that I hadn't necessarily before through the process. And so, yeah, we stitched together all of the photos and video clips to make something that ultimately is a really beautiful, powerful celebration of Milwaukee. And really grateful to have found a song by Kulla called I Want You to Be Kind to Yourself that he graciously allowed us to use in the video. So yeah, really happy with how it came out and grateful for so many artists to jump on.
It was really powerful about the video. And I remember the conversation was like a Monday. It's like, what about this video? Or let's try this idea. And I think we were trying to think of an angle of like how to make it a thank you video, like how to thank the donors. I think that's the heart of it. But I really think what you were able to produce was just this powerful message. Like, wasn't necessarily like this, hey, thanks for helping us out, but rather it was a reaffirmation of what the investment in these folks in this time means. And I think really for me, that's what really touched me or really got me. It was like, wow, right? Like, could you imagine if we didn't have this? And the notion of being kind to yourself as an acknowledgement to these artists who continue to strive, right? Even without this, they were hustling, right? And striving. But to take this moment, like it was just a fascinating, to me, two-way dialogue, right? Of being kind to yourself as artists in this time, taking time to heal or taking time to get through. And just became just a beautiful piece in itself. So I was really struck by it. I thought it was just really, really amazing how you're able to do it within 48 hours and get something to me very resonant, really resonant and powerful.
I do feel, you know, I've watched it so many times and I know that others have too. And I think the thing that strikes me is that seeing very quickly, but seeing so many variety of art forms presented alongside each other like that really fills me with wonder for, I think, how much this city is capable of and how much its artists are capable of. And that's not something you get the opportunity to celebrate in one place very often, right? There are so many incredible things going on right now that organizations are leading the charge on to use their artistic resources during this time. But it's a powerful reminder that the tapestry of our artistic practices in the city really are rich across the board. And so we're trying to celebrate that and continue that, putting forward that idea.
I thought what was so beautiful about the thank you video, Lindsay, was it was almost like the promise kept of the 414 day video, right? Which is basically about how we see you. And then 2 weeks later, we release this video of like, yes, this is what we've seen, right? Like this incredible tapestry, creative tapestry is the thing that we see in our city. And it was just sort of how those two videos played against each other, I think was just really, really powerful.
You went from like 11 to 150 in two videos, right? It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So as we pivot, Antoine and Lindsay, you know, getting through this, what did we learn? Yeah, it could be about yourself and role, or it could be about what did we learn about the arts and culture system, or what did we learn about Imagine MKE, and what does that mean moving forward?
I feel like I've learned a lot. It was cool to see a new connection, like a stronger connection between arts and culture groups and neighbors and neighborhoods. It seemed like for a while, the expectation was only maybe some free tickets to something. And so this has definitely deepened the rapport and hopefully the future of arts and culture in neighborhoods and just allowing things to get a little deeper, to stretch a little farther, to expand. So I think this is just the start. And I'm learning that right now, neighborhood groups are excited to get the arts groups doing what they normally do, because now they want joy. Now they want to be inspired.
Can I turn the question on one of you while yeah, I still you think?
You can do whatever you want.
What did you learn, Mac and David?
I think what I learned is that Imagine on Keys is at its best when it creates a platform to connect and amplify the giftedness that's already there and maybe allow people to see things that they didn't see before and make those connections happen. That happened with conjuring literally $200,000, you know, out of nowhere, right? And conjuring connections in neighborhoods with Marcus Center for Performing Arts, Arts at Large, all these different orgs that stepped into a conversation to figure out how to connect. And I also think those organizations were super impressed when Metcalf Park showed the sophisticated surveying they did when they heard they were able to survey 100 of their residents, right? And I think that taught arts and culture orgs, wow, these are really sophisticated neighborhood orgs that we could be partnering with that are using data trying to understand what best connects with their people. That's what happens. You could turn this pandemic into that opportunity for people to show up in a different way. And I think our goal, I think our best and highest use is when we're able to connect that and invite people to see each other and see themselves. I sure didn't see ourselves as a granting organization 8 weeks ago. And here we are. So I think we learned we could do what we can in a short amount of time, as long as we listen and see what is the most powerful contribution we can make in this moment. And when we hear that and actually honor it, really cool things can happen. That's what I learned. And I hope as we hold that, pandemic or not, that's my hope.
I think for me, organizationally, I think I learned, or it was reaffirmed for me, that we are incredibly adaptable and flexible to meet the challenges of the moment and deliver on them excellently with the help of our, not only our network, but supporters and the city itself. I think for our city's artists, and creatives, I think I've learned that the mission and vision that we have of creating a more inspired and engaged 21st century city, I think I learned that we have all that we need in order to make that possible. And I'm more confident now than ever before that we have the raw materials here, right? We just need to figure out how to Mac's point, convene and activate all of the different pieces with the other institutional partners like business leaders, government leaders, and arts and culture organizations. And if we can, that incredible creative tapestry that is undergirding our city that we saw just a little piece of is going to be the sort of the Kindle that's going to create this incredible engaged and inspired city after COVID-19. And so I think that is the implications for me is how do we sort of begin to connect all these pieces strategically and in a way that actually gets us to this broader goal of our vision. Have we vamped long enough for you, Lindsay?
Well, now you took all of the good ideas.
See, that's what I was ready. I was ready for that.
I guess I will just put another point on a sense of gratitude and reassurance for how deeply our city's individuals, arts patrons, fans, and foundations were willing and ready to step up and change the way they normally do business in support of urgent help for our city's creatives. I just continue to be in awe of that. Not all of their peers in other cities have been able to react so quickly. And so grateful for that. And also, I guess what I've learned is there is already a whole community of artists and patrons willing and ready to buy into this idea, this big crazy idea of the arts and our artists being the future of our city. And this has been a good test of getting that community to come together and act quickly. And so we're ready for whatever's next in service to those goals. Yeah.
Antoine and Lindsay, thanks for not just jumping on the show, but also taking on what that will be and working alongside you on that. That's going to be Awesome. And we may be done with the fun, but as Lindsay offered, we are going to continue to work to bring together artists, arts organizations, and businesses and government to build a stronger Milwaukee beyond the pandemic. As we pivot earlier in the quarantine, we asked three of the many artists we funded in the first cycle of the relief fund what they saw for the future of Milwaukee post-COVID. So you'll hear after the break, Carly's Kelly for Panadanza Dance Company, Adam Kudishat, and Britt Nicole on their thoughts of an artistically engaged Milwaukee after the drop.
To a beach on the countryside, while down the street, whiskey neat, feeling just right.
Well, as everybody is at home, I think they are honing into the arts and they're realizing that is the way to keep joy, to keep healthy, and it's essential out of anything. Like, the arts are gonna get you through it all, you know, through the joy and the pain. It's gonna get you through it. So I'd say keep believing on that. And if you can feel it virtually, imagine honing in together and feeling the energy of another person that way. So just keep lifting that way.
Oh, I can talk without a care because I'm pretty high. City streets, favorite beats, and then bike ride.
Well, one of the things that I raised right away when this happened was, you know, what are we doing for artists who are losing credits? You know, losing money is one thing for performers, but, and this isn't, I mean, I've lost, I think, two gigs so far from this. One of them suspended, one of them I had to give up to stay in the rescheduled shows that I'm currently scheduled for. And, you know, I'm not worried about those credits. My resume's fine. That's not something that I'm worried about for myself, mm-hmm. but what about those people that this was their big break? And now, you know, that has gone away. How do we support those people? Because it can be a brutal scene, especially for women or people of color or people with disabilities, people who are getting into the scene and they're older than you know, the people coming out of college. How do we help those people? And I think we have to, as a community, you know, figure out how we can help those young up and coming people or those old up and coming people be supported, having lost credits and having lost opportunities to build up their performance craft, because it isn't going to be the same in that way. But I also think that, you know, the default is going to be to want to make it the same, right? We were comfortable before, or many of us were comfortable before, and the default is going to be want to come out of this and be like, oh, thank goodness I can see my friends again. I can do the theater that I want to do, and I'm just grateful to be here. Right. I think that's going to be the desire from a lot of the population. And I think what we have to do, and that's part of the reason why I started doing the Facebook Lives that I'm doing, is we need to envision it being a better Milwaukee, a better Wisconsin, a better United States, a better world. We need to have that imagination that allows us to see it as, okay, we're not going to take what we had before. We can survive without the work. How can we make the work better for us? How can we make the work more diverse? How can we change hearts and minds now so that when we come out of this, more people are inspired to change how it works?
It's time to let go.
I would love to see it as like an epicenter, honestly, because there's so much talent here. So a good example is Dasha Kelly Hamilton and Kima Hamilton. They have the retreat right on MLK. And we have been talking about something like that for the longest. Like, that's always been a dream of mine, to have a space where there's constant learning, performing, you know, developing, all like cultivating those gifts all around, and not limited to just spoken word or whatever, but just for it's like somewhere where the artists can just authentically do what they need to do. They can be there for hours, leave written down something, a line, a rhyme, a dance move or whatever like that. And they always have created spaces. Dasha has always created spaces like that for people. Like, if she gets an opportunity and then she will reach out to some of us, that's exactly what we should be doing at all times. There are so many like buildings throughout the city, y'all know, all over, that are not being utilized at all. And given the situation that we're in right now, I mean, people just need a place to to be and feel accepted and feel safe. Because before we could do anything, if you don't feel safe, why are you there? And that's true. So like, the best examples are like what Pentastic, you said, we're there for build, to build, heal, and cultivate. We're cultivating this community. I guess you could say the house full of rejects. At some point, we didn't feel like we belonged anywhere, and then we found a space and took a chance to meet the person next to us and, you know, share in these words and heal from those words and, you know, really build this dope village that outside of this space, I know that if I really needed you, I could reach out to you. You know, and who was that? Lashondra Vernon was talking about like social cohesion. Mm. And we're using these things as far as like, you know, virtual, like virtual reality, online presence is great. But there is something about being in the presence of someone and feeling that energy. She made a great example of like the drum and what that looks like and what that feels like when you hear the beat and the beat changes and then someone comes in and starts dancing. Like you, I'm part of the Rhythmless Nation, but I when someone else is in their element. What makes my heart smile is seeing artists simply in their element, just shining, doing what they do naturally. If no one gave me a cent for my work, I'll still give you these words because it's the impact that's more than the price. Mm-hmm. To know that you're changing lives just because your existence and that you chose that on this platform at this time to go for, I can go on my balcony and just start yelling out words. They're gonna be like, what is that crazy lady doing? But someone's gonna come and stick around and be like, oh, she's doing poetry. And they might pull up their camera, they might go live, and all of a sudden they're, you know, like it's that outreach that we're doing. So we just have to be innovative in our pursuit. I've been thinking about people's mental and emotional wellness by being confined to their homes, and even their homes are not a safe space. We have been practicing self-care and at open mics, at, you know, anywhere, even like they said, Potawatomi closed out. So that could have been self-care for somebody. Yeah. Now they don't have that, but there's no supplement. So what do? We got to care enough about the people to have a supplement versus taking everything away and just saying, we'll figure it out. We have to come together to say, if I'm only gonna have five people, then I'm gonna take that five people and then we're gonna reach five other people and five and reach until we've gotten this whole city. I think no matter where you are, there should be a space for you where creativity can flow. And we don't wanna limit this to just poetry. I mean, the ones who build the structures are creatives. Mm-hmm. The ones who can go inside those empty buildings and say, and visually see everything that it needs to be something really, really awesome, really, really dope. That's creative, you know, to catch that eye. But you have a heart. You have to have a heart to do this, though. Mm-hmm. So if it doesn't start with there, it's not going to work. I also think that we're so antsy to get out into the world and be back in front of people, especially as artists, that it's going to be straight pandemonium trying to book shows. You know, once the venues are back open, it's just going to be like fighting back and forth. Mm. And because like they really want to like, oh, are you sure the band has been lifted? Okay, boom, 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 boom. Everybody's going to hit the ground running. But I think we also need to pace ourselves. There's enough for everyone to eat. We can all catch this. And if you're a business owner waiting for a spot to do that, then this is the time to go up here and get your business plan together so that when the band gets lifted, then all of a sudden you can funnel these artists your way. Yeah. You know, so... And they should still use social media. And they honestly should be working on their craft. Everyone's in front of a camera, in front of the computer. Update your social media links. Put out content. Be consistent. You know, you wanted to subscribe to your page, but you're not giving anything on the page. Why did I subscribe? So this is the time right now, like the waiting period to get all that into practice. So when you hit the ground running, you don't fall flat on your face. Mm.
Well, that was great. You know, like, I think what was so compelling to me was this idea that, like, each one of these artists saw a very clear future for how the arts are essential to what we're doing. And remember, we did these interviews 8 weeks ago at the beginning of this quarantine. And now 8 weeks later, I think we've begun to see, right, how incredibly essential their work is to just our daily lives. I think it's something that we know and we've talked about for the last 8 weeks. But it's just, it's sort of looking back and hearing those voices from the past now. I think it's really instructive.
I think my favorite part of all of our interviews is when we ask them to become the czar, because it allows them to look in the future and really lean on how they know and how they experience Milwaukee and how things could be better. And I just think that it's our charge, not maybe on this pod, but imagine MKE's, to make sure that all those artists have that amplified as we create policy and create work together in the future. That's, I mean, I think that's what I'm struck by, those three conversations. And, you know, I'm struck by the hundreds of artists we've already interacted with at the fund, and hopefully thousands of artists will get to interact with as we continue. How do we make sure that their voice is really front and center as we build Milwaukee coming out?
Well, thank you for listening to another edition of the Imagine MKE podcast. Be sure to rate 5 stars, share a positive review, because it really helps people find us. If you have questions, comments, want to be on the pod, please email us at pod@imaginemke.org.
With regards to social, you can hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at @imagine_MKE. Or if you're in Facebook, hit @imagine_MKE. Mention the pod on social media and on these platforms, and we'd love to make you a #imaginaryfriend. And of course, thanks to all of the 360 #realfriends who donated to the Artist Movie Fund and made it a success. We love and heart emoji till the days go by.
We would name all of you on this pod, but we would be here forever. So we love you so much. Thank you so much for making this happen for all of our artists and for the city.
Talk to you next week, everybody.